Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 12, 2020. President Kiir addresses government supporters upon his return from Kenya. And pro-opposition demonstrators chant slogans in support of 10 states.
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We first go to Khartoum, where some residents welcomed the decision by the transitional government and Darfur-based rebel groups to hand over former President Omar al-Bashir and three others accused of crimes against humanity to the ICC. They say the move reflects one of the revolution's themes of justice and that true reconciliation in Sudan will only happen when victims see that perpetrators of human rights abuses face justice. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Nahed Jabralla, a Sudanese rights activist who works for the national NGO SEMA in Khartoum, praised the transitional government and the Darfur armed groups for showing courage by agreeing to hand over Bashir and three of his former officials to the ICC. She says, thousands of Sudanese families have been waiting for this for a long time.
This is very important to reach justice for women in Darfur and to stand for women who faced and facing till now the rape and other violations. So we are happy for this step.
Jabralla says she would like to see more concrete steps taken by the transitional government to implement the decision to hand over the four men to the ICC. She says by ensuring that Bashir and others are tried in The Hague, Sudan will prove to the world that it is committed to protecting human rights in the country. Speaking in Arabic, Murtada Salah, a resident of Al Janina town in West Darfur state, says by phone that handing over Bashir and other suspects to the ICC will help heal the trauma that victims have faced for years.
This is very important to all of us as Sudanese, and all incidents which have been happening since the beginning of the war in Darfur in 2003 have caused sufferings to the people. So what I see is that if they are handed over to the court, it will be good.
Hashim Abubakr works as a legal advocate in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Abubakr says handing over Bashir to the ICC might have a negative impact on the political situation in Sudan and argues that Bashir's supporters could try to cause insecurity by protesting against the move.
This decision would have some political and security implications on the country. And I'm quite sure that politicians, tribe mates, and professional supporters of those accused within the whole Sudan would not just keep silent on this matter.
Speaking in Arabic to reporters last evening in Juba, Muhammad Hassan Ataishi, a member of the government's negotiation team, says the government is committed to fulfilling its promises made to the Sudanese during the revolution.
Our conviction as government, which made us to agree to allow those who have been issued arrest warrants to be taken before the International Criminal Court. This decision is based on the principle of justice, which is one of the themes of the revolution and based on the principle of no impunity.
Bashir and the three other men face charges for crimes against humanity and genocide committed in Darfur. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit. In Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Juba. Some Sudanese from the Darfur region who are residing in Juba also welcomed the move to send former President Omar al-Bashir and three others accused of crime against humanity to the International Criminal Court. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
Bashir was indicted years ago on 5 counts of crimes against humanity: murder, extermination, forcible transfer, torture and rape, and 2 counts of war crimes including genocide. But Bashir was never arrested despite traveling to other African countries. 61-year-old Mariam Saleh says under Bashir's rule, government forces and allied militia killed more than 30 of her relatives, forcing her to flee Sudan in 2009. Speaking in Arabic, Saleh says she is yearning to return to her home village of Wadi Saleh, but will do so only after Bashir is in The Hague and peace is fully restored in the Sudan.
My view is that let him be taken to the International Criminal Court, because people were killed, people were burned, and we did not have a place. That is why we came to South Sudan. They took 55 heads of cattle and 35 of my relatives were killed.
Saleh owns a small makeshift restaurant in Juba's Customs Market, which is also her home. She says she cannot forget the bitter memories of how her relatives were murdered in cold blood. Nagil Elden Adam, an assistant lecturer at the University of Juba, says he cannot forget the past either. Adam calls the agreement to send Bashir and the others to the ICC a first step toward realizing sustainable peace in the Sudan.
What I have seen and all I have experienced in the past, and the process that is now going on taking Bashir to jail, actually it gives a good emphasis that there will be something good, better than before.
Yasin Bashar, a graduate from the University of Juba, agrees.
I see the peace is not comprehensive as people like, but after the judgment for the Bashir, if the international ISIS has took Bashir, all people, I think, will feel comfortable.
Neither the transitional government nor Darfur's armed groups have said when Bashir and the others will be turned over to the ICC. Lamine Sharif, former chairperson of the Darfur Students Association at the University of Juba, says he hopes it is soon.
They are looking for the way where they can see that at least the justice is took place. So we hope as soon as possible. So all of them, they have to be hand over to the International Criminal Court, and this is the way forward for the comprehensive and sustainable peace in the country.
Yesterday, after the announcement was made, a Sovereign Council spokesman Ahmed Hassan assured the Sudanese people that the transitional government will make certain that Bashir faces trial over crimes committed during his 30-year rule. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Hundreds of residents of Juba town turned out for 2 separate demonstrations in Juba today, one to support and another to oppose President Salva Kiir's existing 32 states when a unity government is formed. One protest was held at Juba International Airport, while the other was held at a UN-run camp for protection of civilians. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The pro-government demonstration held at the airport was timed to coincide with the arrival of President Salva Kiir and other government officials who were returning from Kenya. Mr. Kiir and his delegation traveled to Nairobi to attend the funeral of former Kenyan President Daniel Arap Moi and to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to attend an IGAD summit on South Sudan, which did not resolve the dispute over the number of states and their boundaries.
Welcome, Dennis Day!
At the airport, pro-government protesters chanted, Salva Kiir is our president! Salva Kiir is our president! 32 states, oye! Some protesters carried banners which read, Welcome back our hero of peace! 32 states plus is a red line and should not be touched. Some placards read, Yes for 32 states, no return to colonial districts. No for 23 states. Some protesters were transported to the airport on government-funded minibuses, a move denounced by some critics of the administration. President Kiir told his supporters at the airport the battle over a number of states will not be solved easily.
The fight was very heavy, and whenever the battle is heavy, you have to retreat so that you rest and relax.
Kiir smiled and waved to his supporters from his open roof car as he drove off, telling them he fought the good fight.
So
I have fought the fight with my team and the rest is yours. I have retreated to come and join you. And this is what I wanted to share with you. And you will have more details.
Speaking in Arabic, Juba resident Cornelio Wani, who took part in the airport demonstration, says he supports the 32 states as long as it brings peace and development.
We as disabled, we welcome the idea of 32 states, including Abia, if it is for the good of the people of South Sudan, because we know South Sudan has been in conflict for long and we are tired, and that's why we do not want a political decision, but a decision that can bring the states in which can deliver for the people of South Sudan.
Juba resident Alphonse Kenyi, who is originally from Terekeka State, says he too wants the parties to maintain the 32 states.
We South Sudanese, we don't want our president again to take us back to the war, because the reduction of 22 states plus Abia will bring a lot of problem again than this problem that we are. So that's why we support him, that let him remain firms.
Not all those who turned up for the demonstration at the airport were in support of keeping the 32 states. James Lasso Yesua, a chief from Morobok County in Yei River State, says what he cares about is lasting peace. He knows ordinary people were not consulted when the president unilaterally created more states.
Because people of South Sudan were suffering, people were dying with the hunger, they cannot move away from the town to town. The different, especially our country there, Morobo County, people all was destroyed going to neighboring countries. The village was left empty. The cultivation place was all come to empty people. There is not somebody there to receive. But you know, everyone know that the Morobo County was to feed the South Sudan, even at that time of the Sudan, was to feed up to Sudan. Because Morobo had coffee, tea, and tobacco, and a different type of crops there in Morobo County.
IDPs demonstrating at the UN-run protection of civilians site have a different view. There were demonstrators calling for a return to the original 10 states and delivered a petition to UNMISS representatives. This Tang is one of the organizers of the demonstration.
Any increment to the number of states would lead us to another conflict on land dispute. And to solve this, it would be wise enough to return us to the undisputed 10 states. Your Excellency, allow us to again call for the implementation of security arrangement, because it is the only means to free us and leave the protection camps.
President Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar are expected to return to Addis Ababa this week for more talks on the number of states and their boundaries. The SPLM-IO has threatened to not participate in a unity government if Kiir continues to refuse to budge on the issue. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A well-known professor of literature at the University of Juba is suspended. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how much sleep do you need to be productive?
Usually, I think around 7 to 8 hours of sleep, unless if I have to do something and meet deadlines.
I need 5 to 6 hours because that's enough for me to be productive. When I get enough sleep, for me, I'm active in everything I do on that day.
6 hours. That's the sleep that I need. I'm always the last person to go to bed and also the first person to wake up in the morning. So I think 6 hours for me is good.
I need about 8 hours of sleep because after I had this work, the body is tired. And when I don't have 8 hours of sleep, I'll be feeling body pains and then it will make me unproductive.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp.
Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A renowned South Sudanese writer and professor of literature at the University of Juba has been suspended for speaking out about the stalemate over the number of states in South Sudan. Professor Taban Lo Leong wrote an open letter to U.S. President Donald Trump, which coincided with the visit of U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Thibault Nash to South Sudan earlier this month. The university's vice chancellor fired Professor Taban for allegedly inciting ethnic hatred.
I cannot say anything wrong in my letter. I was commenting on the situation in South Sudan where we are not moving forward on a matter of bringing peace. And then I said, okay, in that case, let me also my comment.
They said your letter amounts to ethnic hatred. They said your letter is inciting ethnic hatred, and also they say you have dragged the name of the university into your own opinion.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I call a spade, and let us work out. We have had roofs and houses destroyed. Who destroyed them? Is it wrong to say the following tribe or tribes did it? Is that a problem? Am I making allegations? And there, can anybody not go from here to Google and find out how things are broken and therefore what?
In your letter, you argued that South Sudan is under local colonization. Can you explain that?
Well, what has happened is this, that in the papers, we have been screaming about hegemony. Hegemony means a tribe coming out and trying to colonize its own brothers and sisters. That is what the meaning of hegemony is. And some people have been priding themselves in saying that they are the rulers. Some people have been priding themselves, but now the Arabs have gone and they become the new Arabs. And therefore, they should walk like rulers and they should harass people like rulers. And then I said to myself, if that is what they say, then they will reveal it. They have said it themselves, the leaders of the movement.
I've also read some comments from people on the social media and some on WhatsApp groups. They are saying you have become a tribalist. They are calling you a tribalist, that you are advocating for hatred in South Sudan.
No. I've written some letters, open letters, in which I say the President Salva Kiir, is my brother, and that we belong to the same father and the same mother. And that I am the young South Sudanese, and they should call my father, and they should also call the president our father, national father. That is, I've done it, and there are many papers where I've written 4 or 2 papers, 2 papers, letters before, and in the papers there. Twice have I called him a brother. And also I've called a brother, so on and so forth. So,
and what are you going to do with this move by the university to suspend you? How are you going to address it with the administration of the institution?
Well, I'm still waiting. Well, there's another letter I said they're writing to me. I want to read that letter, and then I'll make my move.
That was Taban Loliong of School of Education at the University of Juba. He was speaking with me from Juba yesterday. We apologize for that poor phone line from Juba. Civil society activists and University of Juba students are criticizing the administration of the institution for suspending Professor Taban Loliong. A vice chancellor's letter suspending Loliong says he went beyond the freedom of expression.
The suspension letter widely circulated on social media indicates that University of Juba Vice Chancellor Professor Jonah Cage suspended Professor Taban Loliong from his teaching duties for an unspecified period without pay, pending an investigation into the matter. Legal advocate Rach Malwal, executive director for the local NGO Screen of Rights, says Loliong was simply exercising his constitutional rights to freedom of expression. He says he read Loliong's letter on the South Sudan crisis and did not find any clear justification that can lead to his suspension from his professional duties in the university.
There is something called media authority in the Republic of South Sudan. They will be able to call Professor Taban and examine the content of his letter. And on the basis of the recommendation as media expert and as media entity that is dealing with ethics and what is hatred and what is not hatred, the verdict of the media authority will be the one to hold. But otherwise, it is not the university itself to come out clearly and judge on the content.
Malwal says Loliong's suspension was harsh under any circumstances.
I believe that it was not having any basis from the beginning to suspend somebody because they have written an open letter to a president, to a foreign president. I don't believe, too, that somebody can be suspended for expressing his views.
A University of Juba student who agreed to speak on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals from the government says it was wrong to suspend Professor Loliong because he was expressing his personal views.
I think it's not fair for professor to be suspended when what he wrote doesn't have any relation with his work in the university. So as a student, I don't support the suspension. It's to immediately put him back into his professorship and resume his activities.
Wilson Mayer, another University of Juba student, says Loliong is an experienced professor who teaches both undergraduate and postgraduate students. Mayer says suspending him will negatively impact students and called on Vice Chancellor Akech to reconsider his decisions.
We are appealing to the BC, the University of Juba, to at least reconsider the suspension of our professor, because we do not have professors in the university, more especially the college. Our professor is in it, the College of Education.
University of Juba student Men Benson says the professor was not forcing anyone to accept his views.
So it was suggestion, it was a suggestion, and nothing can suspending him.
Professor Taban Loliong is a well-known poet and writer of fiction and literature criticism in Africa. His political views, including his criticism of the post-colonial system of education in Africa, have been widely published and talked about since the 1960s. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Some South Sudanese women leaders and activists say even though the revitalized peace deal requires 35% of government positions in the legislature, judiciary, and the executive be set aside for women, there are not enough qualified women to fill those jobs. They also say many women feel intimidated about joining politics in the current political environment. Ding Magot has the story for VOA from Juba.
Hannah Lona, director for general education in Amadi State, says not many women have joined active politics despite the 35% requirement to hire women in the three branches of government to push forward affirmative action in South Sudan.
We see that the number of women in political parties is minimum. It's not encouraging. And as a politician, I would say as a senior politician, I want to encourage women to join political parties in order to address and assume and take our seats.
But Angelina Teng, head of South Sudan's Defense and Security Review Board, says the political environment is not conducive to women because they believe if they express their views, they will be targeted.
Some women will feel I want to contribute, but you know what? I'm not a giraffe. I'm not going to stick my neck up. I have a family to worry about. I have this and that. The safest way for me to work and earn a living and not start any problems in is civil society, organizations, NGOs.
Helen Kezia Noha, executive director at the Kampala-based Women's International Peace Center, says many women have the capacity to serve in the government, even if they have no political experience.
We do have our reservations that the peace agreement is asking for only women within political parties to be appointed into positions of decision-making. We do have women in civil society organizations, women in business, who have the capacity to be in those positions. So limiting participation only to women in political parties also is a barrier to women's participation. The space needs to be opened.
Kezia is urging party leaders to recruit women and make political parties and offer them benefits just as they do men. Edmond Yakani, Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, says it will be difficult to find women to fill 35% of the positions available in the government unless they are educated.
The key information that women need to know is that this 35% cannot be filled by any structures except political structures like political parties. So the appeal now is that women need to focus on joining political parties.
Yakani says if more women do not join political parties, the chances of men taking over the positions that are supposed to be held by women is high. Some activists say South Sudanese women must be empowered financially in order to play a role in politics. For VOA News, I am Ding Makot in Juba.
And that's the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Anna Sudani by Sumeya.
حكموا العدل في الورى زمن ناطرا هل يعود ذا الزمن ردد الدهر حسن سيرتهم ما بها حطة ولا ذرن نزحوا وراء الفتن
أنا سوداني أنا سوداني أنا
يا بلادي يا بلادي يا بلادي
We've been listening to Sumeya with the song Ana Sudani. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. وصولها اللدنون.